Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am in Numbers chapter 26. We're going to do verses 1 through 65, a whole lot of verses, but it's a census chapter. It's the second census, the census of the new generation. Our context is this. Israel is camped in the plains of Moab, getting ready to cross over the Jordan River. Moses is getting ready to die, and then they had that unfortunate incident with the Moabites trying to seduce the Israelites, and Phinehas put an end to that by stabbing Zimri and Cosby, Zimri being the Jewish guy and Cosby being his Moabite partner, some say wife. I think she was a slut shamer. I hope nobody minds that. And that's what happened in the previous chapter. So now we start with verses 1 through 4, Numbers 26. Then it came about after the plague that the Lord spoke to Moses and to Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, saying, "Take a census of all the congregation of the sons of Israel from 20 years old and upward by their father's households, whoever is able to go out to war in Israel." So Moses and Eleazar the priest spoke with them in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho, saying, "Take a census of the people from 20 years old and upward, as the Lord has commanded Moses." Now the sons of Israel who came out of the land of Egypt were, colon, and we'll see the census in just a little bit. Now it came about after the plague in verse 1, that was the plague in the previous chapter, which hit the Israelites, sent by God because of Zimri's adultery with Cosby. She was a Midianite woman. The Midianites were in league with the Moabites. She was a Midianite. Now that plague had swept away the remnant of the old generation, according to Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown. So there's nobody left. We'll see in a minute that this second census is the census of all those 20-year-olds, or actually those under 20-year-olds, who were left alive after the first census when God said, "You're all going to die in the wilderness," that were numbered. And all those who were numbered were 20 years old and upwards, non-Levites. Some Levites managed to make it through, but if you were a non-Levite, and if you were over 20 or over when that first census was taken, you were toast. You don't get to go into the promised land. You will fall dead in the wilderness. This idea of God's sweeping away the rebellious Israelites is seen in Psalm 95:11. "Therefore I swore in my anger, truly they shall not enter into my rest." And of course, rest refers to the promised land, and it's a symbol of the kingdom of God, as is used by the author of the book of Hebrews, chapter 4. Now the Lord is still speaking to Moses. He says this over and over in the Torah. Of course, we assume that's out of the cloud at the tabernacle. That's where Moses usually talked to God. He's going to take this second census with Eleazar. Eleazar is now the high priest because Aaron has died. If you recall, in a previous chapter, he died on Mount Hor. So this second census is the first census that had been The first census was the one that had been taken over 38 years earlier, 38 years plus a few months. As the NIV Study Bible says, the first generation had almost all died since then, and that's probably the reason for a new census. And notice the reason was for war in verse 2. Take a census of, quote, "whoever is able to go out to war in Israel." So that's the purpose of a census, so that the soldiers can be arranged properly and the generals can know how many military assets they have at hand. Now let me give you some features of this second census and maybe compare it a little bit and contrast it a little bit with the first census. First of all, the prominent clans of each tribe are listed. Now in the first census, you didn't get the family names, the clan names, you just got the tribe names. Clan names, or family names, if you want to call them that, they were listed in the list of tribes that describe the arrangement of the camp in chapter 2, but the family names are different. And I assume that's because a lot of people have been dying out in those 38 years between the first and second census. Now, the members of most of the 8 tribes have increased. Members of most of the tribes have increased, and that's 8 of the tribes have increased. 4 tribes decreased in population, one of which is Reuben. And NIV Study Bible speculates that's because Korah had Reubenite allies in Korah's rebellion. Remember when the earth opened up? And Dathan and Abiram, who were Reubenites, fell into the pit, and Korah and his friends got burnt up. Well, falling into a pit is going to maybe make your numbers go down, because that just happened. If you look at the numbers overall, you see there's a slight decline. They had 603,550, that's a hard number, no textual problems, in the first census. And now in the second census, they have 601,730. So that's basically, that's less than 2,000 different. 1,800 or so different. Big deal. Isn't that amazing? God judged them, and yet now he's still got enough people to go in there and take the land. And so these numbers show both God's justice and his faithfulness to his promise to Abraham. Land, offspring, and blessings to the descendants of Abraham. He punished the Israelites because of his justice, and so the number shrank. But he was faithful to his covenant promise with Abraham, and so those shrunken numbers were replaced. Not quite replaced, but close enough. Now the four tribes who had a shrinkage, were Reuben, Simeon, Gad, and Ephraim. Now of those four tribes that experienced a decrease in population, Simeon was by far the tribe biggest hit. Reuben went down 2,770. Gad went down 5,150. Ephraim went down 8,000. But Simeon went down 37,000. That's four times the amount of the second worst off tribe, Ephraim. Over four times. So Simeon really took a big hit. I don't think anybody knows why that is, but they did. Now verse 2, God tells Moses, take a census of all the congregation of the sons of Israel. Now let's look at that word, all. It means all the tribes except the Levites, because the Levites were not going out to war. This is a census for war. Levites don't fight. They priest. The tribe of Levi, family of Aaron, takes care of the priestly duties, and the rest of the Levites take care of the tabernacle and service. And notice, as in the first census, this census is for those men who are 20 years or older, and that's because this census is for war, and those people were of military capabilities. We go down to Numbers 26, 5 through 11. Now, I'm not going to read all these family members. Let me start out with verse 5 so you get a feel for the pattern of it. Reuben, Israel's firstborn, the sons of Reuben, of Hanok, the family of the Hanokites, of Palu, the family of the Paluites, of Hezron, the family of the Hezronites, of Carmi, the family of the Carmites. These are the families of the Reubenites, and those who were numbered of them were 43,730. So you see, you got a tribal leader, then you got the family leaders right after, and I'm not going to read them all to you because you will be bored to death. Reuben's mentioned first because he's the oldest, of course. Dathan and Abiram are mentioned next in verse 9, the sons of Eliab, Nemuel, again, still talking about the families of Reuben, the sons of Eliab, Nemuel, and Dathan and Abiram. I mentioned earlier, Dathan and Abiram were the ones that were swallowed up in the earthquake because of their rebellion against Moses, a famous incident. And those members of Reuben's tribe are mentioned by name because it was such a big deal. Verse 9 says, these are the Dathan and Abiram who were called by the congregation who contended against Moses and against Aaron and the company of Korah when they contended against the Lord, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up along with Korah when the fire, now the Korah was not swallowed up, it's confusing here, the translation. When that company died, when the fire devoured 250 men, that's where Korah, he didn't get swallowed up, he got burnt up. Big deal. I mean, terrible death either way. So that they became a warning. The sons of Korah, however, did not die. Now, Dathan and Abiram said they were called by the congregation before they got swallowed up. The NIV says they were community officials. The KJV said they were famous. In other words, they were big shot leaders of a rebellion. Leaders of rebellions usually are big shots. KJV's translation famous could mean they had power and authority before the rebellion, which I believe is to be the case. Or it could be, as John Gill points out, that they were infamous after the rebellion. They were not famous, they were infamous. No, I don't think so. I think they were big shots. We can read all about Korah's rebellion in number 16. We've already covered that. Now let's talk about this little confusion. It sounds like Korah was swallowed up here. Let me read that verse to you. And that's verse 10, Numbers 26. And the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up along with Korah. Well, that sounds like Korah got swallowed. Well, but that's not really true. As Clark and Gill point out, number 1632 says this, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up and their households and all the men who belonged to Korah with their possessions. Now that says it's the men who belonged to Korah. It doesn't say Korah got swallowed up. He was with the 250 false prophets who got burnt up. Presumably, as Gill said, he got burnt up. Doesn't say explicitly, so we're going to go with that. I don't know why this NASB translation makes it sound like the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up. With Korah, you could look at it this way. The earth opened up its mouth and swallowed them up. Full stop. Or comma. Along with Korah, when that company died. Along with Korah, comma, when the fire devoured 250 men. In other words, just put Korah with the fire devouring 250 men instead of putting it along with those who got swallowed up by the earth opening up. Now, Korah's sons are said not to have died. Now, in verse 11, it explicitly said this, the sons of Korah, however, did not die. Numbers 26:11. Now, this is an example of how sins of the father do not willy-nilly pass to the sons. A lot of people think that. That's because of those verses that say, the sins of the fathers will be placed upon the heads of the sins of the sons. There's different ways to explain that. My favorite way is that the sons are doing the same sins as the sins of the father, so the sons receive the same punishment, but not for the sins of the father, but because of their own sins. I think that's the easiest way to explain those verses. Because there's another place that says the other places in the scripture that says the sins of the sons will not be visited upon, the sins of the fathers will not be visited upon the son, heads of the sons. And this is an example. Korah's sons did not perish because of their father's rebellion. Probably because they didn't participate in the rebellion, as John Gill says. In fact, we see several of Korah's posterity as singers in the time of David, to whom many of the psalms were sent to be sung. Here's an example psalm, Psalm 42:1. Here's the heading, for the choir director, a maskil of the sons of Korah. A maskil means some kind of a musical form. As the deer pants for the water brook, so my soul pants for you. That famous song, As the Deer Pants. It was dedicated to a son of Korah, the famous rebellion guy. Now, how did these sons escape death? When Dathan and Abiram's sons did not. Dathan and Abiram's sons were swallowed up in the earth. Well, it could be they were out of the way on business, as John Gill says, or maybe they were actively opposed to Korah's rebellion, or maybe they went along with it and then withdrew, says, no, we're not going to go through with this, as Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown suggest, but for whatever reason, they weren't punished for that rebellion. Now we have another little problem here. As Adam Clark points out, it is difficult to reconcile this place with Numbers 16:27 and Numbers 16:31-33. I'm going to read those two passages to you in just a minute. Those two passages seem to intimate that not only the men, but the wives and the sons and the little ones of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram were swallowed up by the earthquake. Well, if that's true, if the little ones of Korah were swallowed up by the earthquake as well as Dathan and Abiram, well, then we have a contradiction because this verse says the sons of Korah did not die. Well, Clark says upon a close inspection of Numbers 16:27, we'll find out that the sons and the little ones of Dathan and Abiram are mentioned as dying, but not the sons of Korah. You have to read it carefully. So let's read it. Numbers 16:27. So they got away from the dwellings, that means the people, got away from the dwellings of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. Meanwhile, Dathan and Abiram came out and stood at the entrance of their tents with their wives, children, and infants. Notice it was Dathan and Abiram who stood at the entrance of their tents, not Korah. Numbers 16:33, we drop down a few verses. They went down alive in the Sheol with all that belonged to them. Who went down? Dathan and Abiram and their wives, children, and infants, but not the children of Korah. It doesn't say that. That's only an apparent contradiction. So now we move to Numbers 26:12-18. Now, I'm not going to read all these verses to you. I'm just going to give you some highlights if there are any. Here's a very minor point. In verse 12, the sons of Simeon, according to their families, of Nemuel, the family of the Nemuelites, of Jamin, the family of the Jaminites, of Jachin, the family of the Jachinites. Now, John Gill points out that two of Simeon's sons are a little differently named here than they are in Genesis 46:10. Well, that's way back during about 400 years earlier. There in Genesis 46, the eldest of Simeon's sons is called Jemuel. Here in this census, it's Nemuel. And in Genesis 46, the youngest son is Zohar, but here is Zerah. And one of the sons mentioned back in Genesis named Ohad is left out completely. Gill says that's probably because he died without children, so that was the end of him. But these little minor details, Jemuel, Nemuel, Zohar, and Zerah, that's probably an artifact of the language. It's close enough. Simeon is listed here in the census second because he was second born probably. Now notice I've already mentioned this in verse 14. He has 22,200 in the second census. His first census he had 59,300. He took the worst hit. Could be he was more involved in that plague that followed Zimri's illicit sexual encounter with Cosby in the previous chapter, where Phinehas speared them both while they were getting it on with each other, probably. Now, I'm not going to mention Gad, but Gad's numbers are mentioned next. I'm not going to read all his family members. He had 40,500. He was down 5,150 since the first census, and Gill speculates that The reason for this was because Gad was a warlike tribe, and he suffered much in attempting to enter Canaan contrary to the will of God and got defeated by the Amalekites. This was, if you recall, after the report of the spies that was bad, and the Israelites said, but we're not going to take the kingdom. We're not going to go in. And God said, yes, you are. Plague, I believe, came upon them, and the Israelites said, we repent. We'll go take it now. And God said, no, I told you to retreat to Eilat, but you know, you're going to go charge up into the Amalekite territory, and you're going to get whopped. And they did. And so that's a speculation that Gil has, that Gad was a warlike tribe and got especially hit in that unfortunate sally into the pagan territory. Gil is a master speculator. I don't know. We go to Numbers 26, verses 19 through 22. And now we're switching to Judah and the list of his family names. Now, two of his family members, two of his sons, Ar and Onan. Now, they're famous because of another story, which we'll get to later in the scriptures. Actually, not later. We already covered it in Genesis 38, 6 through 10. This is the famous Onanism incident, which a lot of Christians like to say, see there, masturbation is wrong because Onan spilled his seed on the ground. Well, I won't get into that subject, but I will say that that is a complete misuse of the scripture. That's not what the scripture was complaining about when Onan spilled his seed on the ground. Let's read this in Genesis 38, verses 6 through 10. Now, Judah took a wife for Ar, his firstborn, and her name was Tamar. But Ar, Judah's firstborn, was evil in the sight of the Lord, so the Lord took his life. You know, I'm pronouncing that R. That's because that looks like Chinese, and I'm used to seeing ER. It means two in Chinese, but maybe that's not how we should pronounce it. Maybe it's Ur. All right, so I pronounce it Ur. But Ur, Judah's firstborn, was evil in the sight of the Lord, so the Lord took his life. Then Judah said to Onan, go into your brother's wife and perform your duty as a brother-in-law to her and raise up offspring for your brother. Onan knew that the offspring would not be his, so when he went into his brother's wife, he wasted his seed on the ground in order not to give offspring to his brother, the Bible's first mention of coitus interruptus. But what he did was displeasing in the sight of the Lord, so he took his life also, so God kills Onan. Now, this does not mean that God killed Onan because he was flogging his log. That's not what it means. This was an example of the Levirate law, which says that if you have a brother and your brother dies, leaving a widow, and the brother dies childless, and so that widow has no offspring, she's going to be cut off, no children. And that's a terrible thing in that tribal society. And so God said, okay, brother, surviving brother, you need to go take the place of your deceased brother and raise up children for your sister-in-law. And those children will not be yours. They'll be hers and her family line, but you're going to have to pay for it. It was just a duty that was required of Israelites. And Onan didn't do his duty. That's why God killed him, not because he was masturbating. All right, some other family members. Well, before we go there, we see Ur and Onan died in the land of Canaan. This incident with Judah and his two sons, Ur and Onan, that happened before Joseph went down to Egypt, before the coat of many colors and all of that. Now, some other family members of Judah. One is Perez, P-E-R-E-Z. He's not famous, but he's known because the line of Jesus would be traced through him, through that family. We see in Ruth 4:18-22, another genealogy. Now, these are the generations of Perez. To Perez was born Hezron, and to Hezron was born Ram, and to Ram Amminadab, and to Amminadab was born Nashon, and to Nashon Salmon, and to Salmon was born Boaz, and to Boaz Obed, and to Obed was born Jesse, and to Jesse David. And we know what the rest of the genealogy is. David, of course, is the ancestor of Jesus. So Perez is the family of Judah through which the line of Jesus was traced. We turn now, well, I'll mention that in Numbers 26, 23 through 25, we have the sons of Issachar, the families of Issachar mentioned, and their total number, nothing interesting there, 64,300. Numbers 26 through 27, we see the tribe of Zebulun and his families, and his number 60,500, nothing interesting there. Now we go to Numbers 26, 28 through 34, and we look at the sons of Joseph according to their families, Manasseh and Ephraim. Now this is interesting because Joseph, of course, was not given a tribe. He was given two tribes, one for each of his sons, Manasseh, the oldest son, and then Ephraim. Ephron, if you recall, was the one who got blessed by Jacob back there in the end of Genesis because Jacob switched his hands and Joseph said, hey, put your hands on Manasseh. He's the oldest one. He gets the birthright. And Jacob says, nope, I'm going to switch my hands and give the birthright to the younger one. And so Ephron ends up being the iconic name for Northern Israel. Actually, Northern Israel is often called Ephron. Ephron ended up with more people, more members of the tribe than Manasseh did. So that reverse prophecy by Jacob came to pass. But right here in the second census, we see that Manasseh had a greater increase than Ephron. He increased by 20,500, whereas Ephron only increased by 8,000. John Gill says, this was a large increase indeed. The NIV Study Bible said this was a greater gain than any other tribe. And the NIV Study Bible also says the reason for this is not known. The order of Ephron and Manasseh is reversed from their positions in the first census. The first census, Ephron was mentioned first, and now Manasseh is mentioned first. But all of the other tribes are mentioned in the same order, no difference between the first and second census. Well, that's nice, but remember, Ephraim's going to end up on top, even though not right now, that's not the case. As the history of Israel unfolds, Ephron will prevail. Now, verse 33, there is a mention of one of the descendants of Joseph, and it's a she. Excuse me. It's not a she. It's a he. It's his daughters who are of interest, though. And this guy, his name is Zelophehad. Verse 33. Now, Zelophehad, the son of Ephron, had no sons, but only daughters. And the names of the daughters of Zelophehad were Mahlah, Noah, Hoglah, Milcah, and Tirzah. Now, why are they mentioned? Well, they're going to get special mention in the next chapter. Because since Zelophehad had no sons, only daughters, since inheritance didn't go to daughters, it only went to sons, poor old Zelophehad would be cut off. And there's one thing in the Old Testament you see very quickly, is God does not like to see families or tribes getting wiped out. The Levirate law was an example of that. We don't want a widow, we don't want a deceased brother to lose his inheritance, and so we make provision for the widow to have a husband from a surviving brother. And likewise here, if you're a man who has nothing but daughters, you can pass your inheritance, your birthright, your inheritance will go to your daughters instead of your sons. That's a special case. We'll see that in the next chapter. We go down to Numbers 26, verses 35 through 41, and we look at the sons of Ephraim. Nothing interesting there, really. Verse 38, we see the sons of Benjamin. Now, here's something a little bit interesting. Five of Benjamin's sons are omitted. I don't know where they were first mentioned, either in the first census or maybe back in Genesis 46. But at any rate, wherever they were first mentioned, they're not here now. John Gill says that's perhaps because they died without issue. We go now to Numbers 26, verses 42 through 43, and we read this. These are the sons of Dan, according to their families, of Shuhan, the family of the Shuhamites. And that's it. No more families. Dan only had one. So why does it say these are the sons of Dan if he only had one son? Well, the answer to that is because the word sons means descendants. So it means the son of Dan plus the grandson of Dan plus the great-grandson of Dan and so forth. We go now to Numbers 26, 44 through 47. The sons of Asher are now mentioned, and the number of the tribes, 53,400. Nothing interesting except in verse 46, we have a daughter of Asher mentioned. Usually it's just men, but here is a daughter. Her name was Sarah, not Sarah, S-A-R-A-H, but Sarah, S-E-R-A-H. The NIV Study Bible says the listing of a solitary daughter was striking. Well, here's some speculations as to why she was mentioned. John Gill says her character must have been remarkable, quote, for wisdom and prudence, or some amiable virtue or grace or another. Well, that's nice, but I'm sure there were a lot of nice women who didn't get listed in a genealogy, so I doubt whether that's true. Could be, but I don't know. Now, John Gill quotes Maimonides, the famous medieval Jewish scholar, who gives a very complicated reason of why she was mentioned here in Asher's genealogy. Maimonides says that Sarah was an heiress. She was not actually Asher's daughter, but Sarah's mother was a widow, Sarah's father having previously died, and so Sarah and her single mom were alone, and so Sarah's single mom married Asher. And so now Asher is her stepfather, and then being his stepdaughter, Sarah is now in the same position as Zelophehad's daughters were. She gets to inherit. Well, the problem with that, in my humble opinion, I'm not an expert in rabbinic law, but the problem with that is that Asher already had sons. I thought the Levirate law only happened when a man had no sons to pass his, the Zelophehad exception only applied to men who had no sons at all to pass some inheritance to. Well, here you've got Asher who had sons and he has a stepdaughter, and so he's supposed to give a portion to his stepdaughter? I don't know, Maimonides. I don't know. I don't know why Sarah is in there. It's kind of interesting, though. Maybe somebody would like to write a PhD dissertation in Old Testament and figure it out. We go now to Numbers 26, 48 through 50. We read of the sons of Naphtali and the number 45,400. Nothing particularly of interest there. We go now to Numbers 26, 51. These are those who were numbered of the sons of Israel. Ah, now we get the grand total, 601,730. As I've already mentioned, the number is just a little bit down from the original census, 1,820 to be precise. This is despite all the trials and all the judgments that the Israelites went through. Now, this is remarkable because it shows God fulfilling his many promises to give the people numerical strength, even as he judges. Of course, the famous promise in Genesis 12, 2 through 3, we read this, and I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, and so you shall be a blessing, and I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you, I will curse. Great nation. I've got other better passages in that about how you, I think it's Genesis, I forgot where in Genesis, where the famous promise where it says that you will have descendants as numerous as the sands of the seashore and as numerous as the stars, uncountable. Well, despite that promise, God had to judge the people for their lack of faith, and all the people in the original census are now dead, except for two, Joshua and Caleb, because they had faith. They were the two spies that had faith. Now, Moses and Eleazar, of course, are still living, and they were living at the time of the first census, but remember, they're Levites, and the Levites were numbered separately. So this idea of under 20 you die did not refer to the Levite census. They're separate. They are not meant for war. All right, we go now to Numbers 26, 52 through 56. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, among these the land shall be divided for an inheritance according to the number of names. Now, we mentioned the census was for war, but it was also so they could divvy up the land properly, because bigger tribes are going to need more land. Verse 54, to the larger group you shall increase their inheritance, and to the smaller group you shall diminish their inheritance. Each shall be given their inheritance according to those who were numbered of them. Again, you got to have the amount of names for a particular tribe, so the distribution of land would favor the larger tribes, because if that didn't happen, then the larger tribes, the individuals in the larger tribes, would be getting ripped off. Verse 55, but the land shall be divided by lot. They shall receive their inheritance according to the names of the tribes of their fathers. According to the selection by lot, their inheritance shall be divided between the larger and the smaller groups. Now in verse 53, God tells Moses, among these the land shall be divided. Well, that means only those numbered above 20. If you're under 20, you don't get land. It's only those above 20. The age of 20, as Gill and Jameson, Fawcett and Brown say, was measured at the time of the census. It doesn't mean at the time of the distribution of the land, because it took 7 years from this point to get into the land, invade it, wipe out some Canaanites, and distribute the land. That was 7 years. Well, you could say, well, I was 13 at the time of the second census, but I'm 20 now. Give me some land, Joshua. No, it doesn't work that way. It's 20. You have to be 20 at the time of the second census before you got included in the land distribution. Well, if 7 years later, kids growing up between 13... kids that were 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, and 19 at the time of the census, there might have been a lot of those at the time of distribution. I can imagine they might be a little bit upset, but on the other hand, their fathers got land and they were going to inherit it. Verse 53 says, the land shall be divided for an inheritance according to the number of names. And again, that means the bigger tribes got the bigger portion. And the number of names, that would refer to the family names. They didn't. Well, this census gave a summary of the family names. I suppose that each family member had individual names listed in a register, family register, so they would have all the individual names. Or it could just mean the number of family names. Doesn't make any difference. The point is the land distribution was fair. Bigger tribes got bigger distributions. Now in verse 54, God tells Moses to the larger group, you shall increase their inheritance. Well, Moses was going to be dead by the time they got to the promised land, so it can't mean you personally. It means whoever's in charge at the time of the distribution is going to do it, not you, Moses. Now in verse 55, we see that the land shall be divided by lot. Now there's a little problem here. The land was supposed to be distributed according to number, so why are we throwing lots? Why are we saying, how much do you get and how much do you get? That's decided by how many people there are. And the number was divided, the land was divided according to the number of people in each tribe. That's true, but you still don't know where the land is. Who gets the land by the trees and by the water and all that? The hill country, the valley country, the desert. That was done by lot, as NIV Study Bible and Jameson, Foster, and Brown say. Now, this idea of throwing lots, it sounds so superstitious, so ungodly, but remember, back then they did this all the time. Proverbs 16, verse 33, the lot is cast into the lap, but its every decision is from the Lord. God is sovereign. When you roll the dice, God controls the dice. So he said, okay, we'll do it by lot, but I'm going to control it here so that I distribute the tribes, put them where I want to put them in the land. So we go down to Numbers 26, verses 57 through 59. We're finished with the numbering of the 12 tribes, well, the 11 tribes of Israel. Now we see the Levites are numbered here separately, verse 57. Numbers of the Levites according to their families. Now, these families we've already mentioned before in an earlier chapter, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. Why are they so famous? Well, they are the ones that were in charge of the tabernacle. Now, the family of Aaron, of course, was the priest, but these are not mentioned right here. Let's rehash that. I always have trouble remembering this. The Gershonites carried the coverings and the curtains of the tabernacle and the hangings of the courtyard, so they were the curtain carriers, the Gershonites. The Kohathites carried the holy furniture, the Ark of the Covenant, the table of the bread of the presence, the seven-branch candlestick. They also carried the bronze altar, which was in the courtyard. That's the Kohathites. And the Merariites, I guess you would say. They carried the superstructure of the tabernacle, the boards and the planks and such. All the families that were in the first census are not mentioned here. Could be some of those earlier families had no sons, and so they're not listed, as John Gill says, or they had sons, but the sons died. But at any rate, it shows there is a little bit of difference. And then, of course, you get Moses' family, Amram, Jochebed. Amram is Moses and Aaron's father. Moses and Aaron's mother was Jochebed, or Aaron's wife was Jochebed. Jochebed, of course, was a daughter of Levi. That's why Moses and Aaron are Levites. Jochebed was born to Levi while they were still in Egypt. And she bore Aaron and Moses. And let's not leave out Sister Miriam. These are very famous, of course. We go now to Numbers 26, 60 through 62. To Aaron were born Nadab and Abihu, Eleazar and Ithamar. Now, those four are worth remembering. Nadab and Abihu were the oldest sons of Aaron and were in line to succeed to the high priesthood, but unfortunately they offered strange fire, illegal fire. Leviticus 10, 1 through 2, Aaron's sons, Nadab and Abihu, each took his own fire pan, put fire in it, placed incense on it, and presented unauthorized fire. That's the Holman Christian Study Bible translation of the King James, strange fire. And presented unauthorized fire before the Lord, which he had not commanded them to do. Then fire came from the Lord and burned them to death before the Lord. You don't mess with God's holiness when you're serving in the tabernacle, folks. And they did, and they got fried. Eleazar and Ithamar are the two families that inherited the high priesthood. Eleazar had the high priesthood ever since Aaron had died a couple chapters earlier on Mount Hor, is where he was buried. And Eleazar took over the priesthood. Ithamar's family took it over later on during the times of Eli and Samuel for about 150 years, but then the Eleazar's priesthood went on, and then it kind of disappears into history. Some people think it went all the way up into the time of the Maccabees, but by that time they were buying and selling the priesthood so fast and so easily and so loosely that people sort of lost track of whose family was which. But these guys are sort of famous, so we need to remember Eleazar and Ithamar. Now, the number of Levites is 23,000. The first census, it was 22,000, Numbers 3:39. So they went up a little bit. And in verse 62, we see that the Levites were, quote, not numbered, unquote, among the sons of Israel. And that's because they didn't get an inheritance. There was no need to distribute land to them because they were not going to get land as an inheritance, and they weren't going to fight in the military. They were going to get cities scattered out through the other tribes' inheritance, but no land. So that's why they were not numbered in the other census. We go now to Numbers 26, 63 through 65, and we will finish this chapter. These are those who were numbered by Moses and Eleazar the priest. Now let's just stop here. It could just refer to the Levites who were just numbered, or it could refer to all of them, all of the Israelites. I prefer to think it refers to all of the Israelites. He's just summing up the chapter here. I know they didn't have chapters, but he's summing up this section of the scripture. Verse 64. But among these was not a man of those who were numbered by Moses and Aaron the priest, who numbered the sons of Israel in the wilderness of Sinai. That's the first census. For the Lord had said of them, they shall surely die in the wilderness. And not a man, there's that phrase again, not a man was left of them except Caleb the son of Jephunneh and Joshua the son of Nun. Now this not of man is referring to the census of the 12 tribes, not the Levites, as John Gill says, because there were some Levites who managed to get numbered in both censuses. For example, Eleazar, he was in both of them. Ithamar was in both of them. Jameson Fawcett Brown says he was certainly in both of them. Gill says probably. Okay. Moses, he was a Levite. He was in the first census. He was still alive in the second census. So you got to realize that this people falling in the desert, they are the people of the 12 tribes who are not Levites. And there were probably other unnamed Levites too who managed to make it through both censuses. Why were the Levites not included in the first census? And why were they not designated as people whose corpses were going to fall in the wilderness if they were 20 years old or above? Well, they had not sent spies into the land who then gave a bad report, speculates Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown. I don't know. I just think it's because they weren't in the first census at Sinai, so they didn't count. Their descendants weren't going to fall in the wilderness. All right. So now when it says not a man of them was left, forgetting the Levites, let's go back to the original 12. Not a man of those who were numbered by Moses and Aaron the priest. That means the first census of the 12 tribes, the non-Levites. Not a man. Well, is that literal? Well, what about Caleb and Joshua? They made it through both censuses. And so some people say, well, this is not talking literally. It just means that the overwhelming majority of them died. I don't like that because not a man sounds like literally not a man. Well, but the phrase not a man is repeated in verse 65. They shall surely die in the wilderness, and not a man was left of them except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua. So there's the exception just one verse later. So, I mean, if you want to cut off verse 64 and say it's not literal because you got to include Joshua and Caleb as one who made it through both censuses, but you can't cut it off at 64. You got to go to verse 65, and we see that not a man is conditioned by the existence of Caleb and Joshua. Minor point, but just want to make sure we protect the integrity of the scriptures from those who love to tear the scriptures down to their own hurt and to the confusion of the saints. Ladies and gentlemen, we have now finished Numbers chapter 26, the second census. In our next audio, we will turn to Numbers 27, verses 1 to 23, the whole chapter, and we'll look at the special case of the daughters of Zelophehad, who had no brothers to inherit, and we'll also see how Joshua is designated as Moses' successor. I hope you listen in to that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.